And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Good afternoon here on what is a soggy, a super wet, and a, in some cases, it was a little bit stormy. That obviously being your Wednesday, and in some parts of Windhoek specifically. And that the rainfall seems to have caught everybody at surprise in, at, you know, just because earlier today it just looked like it will just rain. Go away, and then no one thought about it coming back because there was actually some sunlight, but it did come back, and yeah, we were all caught off guard a little bit. But this is the Drive Time session with your favorite duo, as Helmut always says, here from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. daily, Monday to Friday, where we obviously give you the insightful discussions, as you heard from the jingle right there, and also the... I don't want to add anything else more, Helmut, because I almost said, you know, we give you the sauce, but then I realized we actually give the meat. We don't give any sauce. You know, we give more meat to the plate. There's already sauce in your plate. So yeah, we give you more meat to chew on. I'm now starting to salivate myself for some reason. But yeah, we give you more meat to chew on with the daily discussion we bring you. And today is one such particular soup. And I'm not talking about those watery soups. I'm actually talking about the soups that have got a lot of chewy chunks in it. From meat pieces to veggies, everything healthy. I know, guys. I'm busy hallucinating here with food. But that's where we find ourselves in, primarily as we look back at some of the major themes and talking points that popped up from the recent Namibia International Energy Conference. I thought it was oil and gas, straightforward, but... It sort of like went encompassing energy to say energy everywhere. But I was more interested, Helmut, in honesty, at the key speeches that took place before then, like the Chevron speech and the Rhino Resources speech. So both of them highlighted. We will drill end of this year, or we will explore end of this year. Nothing says we will produce by end of this year, which has been the thing that you and I have been trying to understand. Where is this discussion of before 2030 we must be pumping oil? Where is it coming from?
Okay, first of all, when it comes to these things, like when it comes to basically everything, and look, I thought this is only something that's in the political sphere where, you know, expensive promises are made without basically explaining clearly in terms of blueprint how those promises are going to be made, like what needs to be in place, how it's going to be done, how is it going to be done, and what time frame are we looking at.
Yeah.
And that's why, the biggest advice I've gotten when it comes to this subject, especially in relation to oil and gas, or basically everything, natural resources, and its discovery and information being shared about the state of, you know, the state of affairs, how things are going on the ground. Here's the thing. Mr. Chauvin clearly explains that in his Guide to the Namibian Economy, that when this information is being shared, especially, and he's just writing this about oil, when this is being shared, whether it's coming out of the corporate sphere or the political sphere, take it with a pinch of salt. Actually, when it's coming out of the political sphere, take it with a wheelbarrow of salt. when it's coming...
You really had to go that far.
Yeah, but wheelbarrow. Well, the thing is, those guys just make promises so that can be, the point from my understanding that Mr. Chauvin is making is that when it's coming from the economic sphere of things, chances are very high it's being you are being overpromised because just to make themselves look better, because their company's shares depends on good PR. So, good PR, or more like over-exaggeration to some degree, works for them in the economic sphere of things. And in the political sphere of things, it also works for them, because the more wonderful promises you make, the more you give yourself and your political party a very good PR. Therefore, that translates into, good image for your party and good members. And then 5 years down the line, good votes.
Mm.
So, whatever
that's if people could remember every speech that was given for 5 years in a row.
Yeah, man, you just repeated the campaign. You just repeat, you know, the positive parts.
That is true, eh? That's yeah. Pretty clever.
And one thing that the comedian George Carlin pointed out that I totally agree with. That man was a psychologist. That his point of view was that people are easy to lie to when they are in a big group. The bigger the group, the easier it is to fool. And if you look at miracle churches, really understandable. But that point is a very important one, because if you go to political campaigns, we don't ask questions. We just start clapping. If the person next to you is clapping their hands, you don't even ask, what did the man say that you are that's making you clap your hands? We just, oh, bravo. That's the only Osinherero I know.
I would know.
So,
no.
So now, if you, for those of you that have made your way to our social media, especially Facebook page, and you have seen our poster, then you know that, obviously, this oil and gas discussion is coming from 2022. It's coming from 2022. And the survey that was done, which I actually think is a good source of reference in terms of looking at the time frame that Namibia is going to reach the production phase in Namibia's oil and gas industry is going to reach production phase. I will still, I'll still be with the, because of the point you just made, I'll still rely on that survey and still basically believe their projection of Namibia's oil and gas reaching production phase in mid-2030s.
Yeah. But it is a good benchmark, Helmut, because so far no one brought out anything else. No one has gone and said, okay, let's try and debunk that report, that baseline survey study.
Yeah. Which would have been nice, as long as you're just bringing out all the, that, you know, the math that you have done based, coming from your expert point of view.
And the particular math that obviously said particular debunker would be applying would be math around the discussion of, okay, so how should we view this? Do we view it in terms of, was there a narrative? Was there a specific story being told? Or was there an actual approach towards understanding how Namibia would fit into being an oil, into the profile of being an oil producing country? So far, those first speeches were just about, yeah, we are here. We sponsored for this conference. We are here. We are happy.
Mm-hmm.
We want Namibians to participate.
We promote partnership.
We hear the government. We hear the national theme.
We hear the president.
We are willing to work as resource companies with the Namibian government in trying to achieve Namibia's goals. But there is only one resounding fact that the main speeches all highlighted was Namibia is drawing attention.
Yeah.
Remember last week when I referenced the carrier, the aircraft carrier?
Yeah.
You are right, Helmut. It was on its way to Iran. It's on its way to Iran.
Relax. No one needs an aircraft carrier to take down Namibia.
Technically, you just need two planes from that aircraft.
Forget two planes. Just close down Namib breweries and we're cooked.
Oh, yeah. That too, Or deny them hops and barley sort, You just target one company, then Namibians will be up in arms with dementia, definitely.
Yeah. If your targets are Gen Z, just switch off the internet.
Or electricity.
Ah.
So we understand that Namibia has grown in stature, that it has an interest specifically outside. But before we continue, guys, we take a short ad break.
At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like
36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots Baby Walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We are 16 minutes into the hour of four. So we're just getting started here in the oil and gas discussion. And now, if you look at the overall energy discussion taking place, especially in the theoretical sphere of energy discussion all across the world, what you're seeing is that there's a lot of talks, about, energy transition and the need to transition from fossil fuel to renewable energy, non-renewable to renewable sources of energy. Yeah. So that also speaks into the transition from what we are basically all licking our fingers on, when are we going to reach production phase in terms of Namibia's oil and gas industry? So the desperation is understandable, but here's the thing. It's not going to, that's not going to fast track everything. Yep. The experts have to go through the standard procedure to make sure that once, production is reached, you don't have disasters that is going to drag you 5-10 years down the line for you to restart all over again.
Yeah.
Because one wrong move and this, not only does Namibia have oil, Namibia has oil offshore. That means you need a whole different type of infrastructure that to get it than you would if it was onshore.
It's a good thing, Helmut, that you highlighted the onshore offshore discussion as well, because obviously much of the participants from this conference were highlighting their participation in the offshore realm of things. But I quickly want to stray away from, what the theme of the overall message that was being conveyed by the speakers at the energy conference, and what they tried to install, which was highlighting positivity, highlighting loving being in Namibia. To me, every time it just sounds like a tourism advert when everyone talks about, I love being in Namibia. I love being in Namibia.
It's my first time here.
It's my first time here. Shout out to my homies back in Mongolia. I've just chose Mongolia randomly, guys. Don't worry. And look at me. I'm sand duning. And then they talk about things that we Namibians go like, oh my goodness.
But still nothing is going to beat that Swiss guy who was like, I was locked here during COVID-19 and I met my wife. Like, dude, can we talk about what we're here for?
Homeboy had to emphasize, I was locked up here in COVID-19. I couldn't fly back, And then I stood there. Do you know what was the first thought I went through my mind? Was he potentially the guy that was in Central Hospital that was quarantined there?
The first guy?
There was a tourist that was solo.
On
a specific ward during COVID.
Man, that makes you lonely.
He wasn't a South African tourist. He was literally a European tourist who was, he was like patient X. One of the first patients.
The patients I'm thinking about, I think those were Belgians, the couple.
Were they the patient X?
I'm not sure.
With the truck driver.
Yeah. I'm not sure if they were, they are the ones that were, you know, with that particular designation.
Yeah, but there was a guy that was literally, he was literally cordoned off.
Yeah.
In a ward, technically had the whole floor to himself.
My man.
And when someone stands up and says, you know, I'm the first, I you know, I was stuck here and due to COVID, I was like, you're a tourist. How do you get stuck in Namibia?
Yeah, well, lockdown.
There were flights for you to
go
back.
On the bright side, dude, he found love and business in Namibia. See, Namibia is a land of opportunities.
For other people. For other people.
He's from Switzerland. Of course he has money. Look.
Yeah, he has access to banking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, banking we don't have. But yeah, so the just quickly straying from the themes and the talking points that popped up. I'm going to bring in the IEA, Helmut, and the OPEC discussions because they brought out recently at the start of this month literature based upon energy statistics and energy trends that they've analyzed. So the 2026 Global Energy Review by the IEA, I'm just going to read the first paragraph in their key findings, is that all major energy fuels and technologies grew in 2025. But at very different rates. Overall global energy demand growth slowed to 1.3%, just below the average for the previous decade. So this means 10 years ago, it was just below the particular average of the previous decade. Now, slower economic growth and slower growth in energy-intensive industries in some regions, coupled with lower cooling demand and also faster efficiency improvements, all contributed to a slower demand growth. Then, heading over to the OPEC, they call it the Annual Statistics Bulletin. This is by OPEC itself, and they just continuously update these statistics every time. Now, the bulletin that I'm going to open up, Helmut, is the 2025 one, not the 2026 one, because 2026 technically is not done as yet. In the 2025 bulletin, the key findings, and this is now looking at, once again, everything energy-based. Mm-hmm. So not just focusing in on oil sources, oil. Even though this is technically an oil discussion. Let me rephrase what I said. So this is now zoning in on an oil and a crude oil supply discussion and a crude oil demand discussion, because we are extrapolating oil out of the energy talking point that the IEA sort of like had an overall assessment of. Now, for 2025, the annual statistics bulletin by the OPEC organization highlighted that the total crude oil production declined in 2024 by 0.77 million barrels. So we're saying 770 million barrels of oil per day, which is a 1% compared to the 2023 sort of like growth that they measured for 2024.
Yeah.
Now, it says this marked the first annual decrease following three consecutive annual increases since 2020, reaching an average of 72.58 million barrels per day. Crude oil production from OPEC member countries and non-OPEC oil producing countries participating in the Declaration of Cooperation had declined year on year by 570 million barrels per day, or 2.1%, and 780 million barrels per day, or 5.2%, respectively. While crude oil production from non-Declaration of Cooperation countries rose by 580 million barrels per day, or 1.8%. Now, the demand, so that's the production side of things. The demand side of things in the same document highlights world oil demand grew by 1.49 million barrels per day. Let me say it again, 1.49 million barrels per day. The year-on-year increase is 1.5%, to reach an average of 103.85 million barrels per day in 2024. Oil demand grew year on year in almost every region, with the largest gains recorded in non-OECD countries of Asia, China, India, the Middle East, Africa, Latin America, and OECD Europe. So what is OECD, guys? So OECD is not a UN organization. It's the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, but it is mostly sort of like a reflection of the G20 or G7 countries of the world and affiliates, which includes South Korea and Japan. Hence the reason why you hear of non-OECD nations, which is in Asia. So that means South Korea and Japan and maybe Taiwan. And the other scenario, obviously, is a question of you can see the growing appetite in 2025 coming about through all these regions of the world, meaning all these regions of the world probably had robust economic activity taking place. Now, robust economic activity, Helmut, does not also translate to you actually scoring oil if you're in Namibia exploring for oil.
Mm-hmm.
Robust economic activity could be, for example, interest in the rare earth minerals discussion. Robust economic activity could probably also mean that new data came out that is regarding, you know, offshore oil exploration or new, exploration zones were made available. If you ever saw a map, Helmut, that was an interesting map I once highlighted or actually once saw. When the Brazilian oil exploration activity was here in the 2015, 2016, 2014, thereabout. They were pretty close to Walvis Bay, meaning it was like 50 k's or something from the shoreline, you know, pretty close. Or let me say, but it's not 100 k's, but they had like two blocks directly not far from the shoreline. And when you look at the exploration taking place now in the southern part of Namibia's national waters, which is almost 300 kilometers away, you can immediately see when you do distance comparisons, how the one was pretty close and the other is like way out there, 300 kilometers away.
Yeah.
So literally it's from here to Swakop, you know, if you're sitting in Windhoek to Swakop. So when we look at this particular discussion, that obviously highlights new information, new appetite, new interest. So who are the big players there? Oh, we hear there's major backing from Qatar, the Kingdom of Qatar, through the oil exploration activities taking place. And now we obviously heard Chevron has a block there. The Rhino Resources guys have a block, an exploration block there. And they are happy to be here. But does the happiness convert into a reality? Or does it still just say, like what NSA will always say in the economic activity, mining is once again leading economic performance because there's all this money and goods flowing into the country affiliated to the mining sector.
Mm.
Will it do the same? Just that same? And it's not even a trope. It's not even a trope. It's later on. It's literally a song now. A song that you can sing year in, year out. Mining sector leads overall economic positive performance. And when you take away mining sector's performance and you try to now look for actual resilience in the Namibian economy, which was the conversation I went to yesterday. No? Yeah, yesterday at the UN. Ah, Helmut, it's a lovely conversation. You should hear, my guy. So it's an awesome conversation about resilience.
There was a conversation about resilience at the UN.
Resilience.
Wait, where did it take place?
Yeah, you in the house. It's those audios that I sent yesterday.
So there was an event here that was, I should have heard, but I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I'm going to murder someone.
Well, it's not going to be me, don't worry. You know?
No, not you.
Yeah. So, someone else.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. I think I know who. So when you look at, but she wasn't there. She wasn't part of it. No, she wasn't. Don't worry. Even though this was all UN agencies presenting something.
Yeah.
World Food presented something. FAAO wanted to present something. World Health, I left when World Health was trying to say something on the last panel discussion, because, you know, with health-related matters, sometimes when it's like times of crises, it's either health is the first respondent to the scenario, like a combat zone or a war zone, or it has to observe and monitor what are going to be the effects from a certain thing. For example, in this discussion, the World Health Organization's Namibia office obviously just could say, from what I could discern, you know what, we have to see what are going to be the resultant, but sort of like not so obvious effects of dire economic situations. So what is a dire economic situation? If the OPEC nations meet on 3 May next week, which is Sunday technically, if they meet when they meet on Sunday, the founding members of OPEC, what's going to be the resolutions that are going to come out of there? They've got a meeting slated. It's one of the things that I sent you as well. They've got a meeting slated for then. What's going to come out of that meeting? A second scenario is, how will it then have the inflationary pressures on the cost of living, on access to food, on how much your $100 can afford you in the shop? Because once again, you know, my Google feeds on my phone is going wild, because yesterday it was Donald Trump saying, I got a proposal. Today, Donald Trump is threatening Iran about the proposal that they sent. But here's the thing. The American negotiators are not even in Pakistan, but the Iranians are in Pakistan. So, the Bank of Namibia gave a lovely, lovely statement on, okay, not a statement, but they made a lovely claim in the economic, Namibia's economic outlook for 2026. At the bottom of that document, they say, if U.S., man, let me just find it. I know the sentence even. If U.S. activity, U.S. policy.
The Middle Eastern thing or a different thing?
Like an overall. I'll just read you that line. Yeah, okay. Globally, ongoing geopolitical tensions as well as evolving U.S. policies may contribute to volatility in commodity prices, which it already is.
Yep.
Exchange rates, which it already is, and the cost of key imported inputs such as fuel.
And condoms.
Why did you go there?
Well,
why did you go there, Helmut?
It's winter.
And? No, it's 1st of May. May is not winter. Now you're giving impressionable individuals listening to us a different impression.
Believe me, I'm not teaching them something they don't know.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So yeah, so that is the current scheme of things. That's the current lay of the land. It doesn't matter if people came and made lovely speeches there at the Namibia International Energy Conference about, yeah, we're going to do this. I feel like I'm going to do this. We see ourselves, you know, in this positive light by the end of 2026. And everyone was like, brah, brah, brah.
Brother, get to the point.
Brah, is there anything tangible that you're telling us? No, just wait, just wait, just wait. You know, we're going to get there. You know, it's all about, you know, putting up, you know, making and ensuring that everything is good. However, there's a good thing that you mentioned earlier, Helmut.
Yeah.
In some cases, we also have to acknowledge that many of these operators in Namibia's exploration sector, they have shareholders in other countries.
And legally, you don't have to like it. That's just how well capitalism operates. As of 1919, from the Henry Ford Motor Company and the Dodge Brothers case, their priorities are the shareholders.
Yep. So the...
They can give you one heck of a rosy speech, but their legal priorities are the, are their shareholders.
Are the interests of the shareholders. The
interests of the shareholders. Yeah. And my favorite part of company law is the fiduciary duty of directors, which sort of like send my head spinning last time, you know, the first time I did that, because the document I was reading it up on was referencing South Africa.
Mm.
And in South Africa, those duties are found in the Companies Act. And so I decided to get the Namibian Company Act to basically go through and see where if I can find the equivalent of that, because our legislations are basically for the most part, copy, edit and paste.
Mm.
It turns out those duties in South Africa of directors in South African law, they're in Company Act, here in the Close Corporation Act.
Mm.
I only realized that after, around 3 a.m, my eyes were turning red. I was just going to end it. Our Companies Act is, I think it's one of the longest piece of legislation. It's about 300 pages. Most of the acts you have are just, less than 100 pages. So now their roles, the responsibilities of directors are heavily leaning towards the organization.
Yeah.
Like, again, you don't have to like it, but unfortunately, that's how things are. Now, that's why at this event that was just held on this Nambusa International Energy Conference, if you look at it, there are a lot of things that how to put this? There was a lot of beating around the bush.
Yeah,
a whole lot of it. One gentleman you can tell he wanted to, make a point about how the Namibia's oil and gas industry is going to benefit the ordinary Namibians. But again, you can tell this is someone who is basically rooted in reality. If you look at this, skills acquisition and relations to the industry and the time that where we are today and where production projections like within in terms of dates has been set. And all these things, it's we're still dragging behind.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, that's just me reading between the lines of what he was trying to say. Now, that was Mr. Conrad Ramsey talked more about, strategic partnership.
Yeah.
And he said something along the lines of, to become, partnership is about mutual benefit, it's about, transparent, and that requires legal, a clear legal frameworks, basically in reference to the points that the president made earlier during his speech.
Mm.
And Mr. Mafina from AZUK pointed again something similar to that, which was basically talking about collaboration. But before he got to the collaboration, he also did talk about when it comes to social content policy, we have to deal with the reality here.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also have to look at the reality. I believe those are the exact words that have to. We also have to look at the reality. That's when I was like, okay, he's headed the right direction. And then he turns again, about where we are. Like, there's a very nice phrase that he used in terms of running. And, we don't want to sprint to get there. Yeah. We don't want to sprint to get there. In other words, we want to take all the necessary step and considering in all the necessary precautions to make sure that once, when we get there, we are there. There's nothing dragging us back again.
Mm.
And I understood his point to mean we have to up our skills to be in line with this industry if we want to benefit. Otherwise, then we'll just be making noise.
But that's the lovely thing about the particular speeches I heard this morning. This is now dragging in something else completely different, Elmo, because obviously one of our advertisers had their graduation ceremony today. That's now UNUM. The president was also there, and the former president, because he's the current chancellor of the University of Namibia. And one from the president's speech, she highlighted specifically that Namibians now have to start... it's something I also heard from a lecture I had for my media entrepreneurship subject. We should not just be looking at Namibia as the only market, but we have to also be honest in some scenarios. The basic principle regarding if you're now going to walk away from, let's say you graduate,
mm-hmm.
from whatever you studied.
Yeah.
And you're now told, get into the market and do something with your life. We have to acknowledge certain realities, Helmut. Firstly, access to financing is one of the core hurdles.
Yeah.
Second thing is also, where do you have markets? Because Helmut, how are you going to launch now? Let's say it's going to be a stand-up comedy platform, ne?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know about the level of audience, let's for example say in Liberia.
Yeah.
Or you don't know they're in, you know, what they're doing there. Why I cite this is there's a new guy that I'm also now watching on YouTube. He's an Australian. He's a teacher. He's a former teacher. And he became interested in resources benefiting Australians because the Australians from another platform that I kept watching, known as the Australian Institute of Oil and Gas or Gas or something like that, or Natural Resources, they kept using the phrase that they give their resources, the extraction activity out of it.
Yeah.
They give it away for free.
Oh, and Australia is loaded with natural resources.
They give it away for free.
And dangerous insects and all kinds of snakes. But let's focus on natural resources.
Yeah. So, and spiders. So,
and people.
And kangaroos. So, his channel, his YouTube channel's name is Aussie Punters or Punters Politics, he calls it. The word punter obviously means, you being someone interested in the current affairs of your country.
So it's not panda, as in the animal?
No, okay. Punter.
It's a T.
Yeah, okay. Punter. But a punter can actually, in America, the word punter means you're a kicker of the ball.
Oh.
Which is also the other particular explanation of the word punter, to punt the ball, you kick the ball. But in Australia and in the UK, the word punter technically also means someone participating or advocating for a particular conversation in current affairs in that country.
Yeah.
So he cites, this is what he does. He cites how many people locally are interested in the subject matter and the conversations he has regarding specifically, do Australians benefit from their resources?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I said, I couldn't believe that the Australians started talking about, but we're giving away our oil for free. We're giving away our gas for free. And I kept asking, what do they mean by this? And they literally don't have a fee or anything, some structure, anything for a multinational extraction company to come and extract the product.
Like in terms of a legal framework?
Nothing. There's nothing in the legal framework even talking about pay a fee.
That's intentional.
It is intentional. And the biggest conversation currently happening on, you know, like in the Australian sphere is that there's so much more awareness. Now, that's just one of the reasons why I like the word woke, because the word woke does not just ultimately mean anything to do with LGBTQ plus affairs.
Like being over, you call it over progressive?
Well, look, Helmut, you and I, we technically are also progressive. We are also technically liberal. No. With hints of conservativeness, of conservativeness.
Yeah, well, everyone has a line, like.
We all have a line because no one is just
an like extreme. Extreme in both directions is a terrible idea.
Even though you might not go to church,
And
even though you do have a highly religious background,
yeah,
I also have a highly religious background, but I also don't go to church. But it's also a conversation where you have to look at. Do you see similarities across the whole Namibian population spectrum of people like Dwight and Helmut? Do you see someone that comes out of a highly religious background? Definitely, you'll find that person.
Yeah.
Do you see someone that believes in, you know, morality? You know, things must be okay. You don't want chaos in your economy or in your country. Things must work for everyone. Which is why everyone can easily subscribe to the words and the catchphrases that the president uses, because she used it again today, the phrase of, we are too few to be poor. I agree as well. We're too few to be poor.
But we're poor.
But we are poor. I still believe, since we've got the Sovereign Wealth Fund can literally do what the Alaska Fund is doing.
Okay, but how long is that going to take before it starts actually pulling off something that Alaska is doing?
But Alaska's one was literally immediately.
Really?
When you read up about that fund,
yeah,
it was literally like the next year. They had a referendum, like yeah, you explained yesterday, yeah, what the Iceland, the Swiss, was it the Finns or the Icelandics?
The Swiss.
The Swiss. They had a referendum. The Swiss have got like 7 million people in the size of Karas. Do you think it's difficult to have a referendum in Namibia?
It's not.
About a subject matter?
It's not.
With just Namibians, not lobbyists, not foreigners, just Namibians. What do you think? Must we collect XYZ royalties and XYZ taxes, and the royalties literally go into the sovereign wealth fund, and the taxes aim to help with ensuring that the basic operations in the country, like local authority functioning and all that, and repairing your roads and, you know, having a clear cut issuance of procurement contracts into the local content infrastructure or ecosystem of Namibia stays sound and everyone still benefits? Or do we start talking about these elaborate processes like the EITI and open contracting and subscribing to, what's that one about the UN? The UN tax framework, the discussion you and I
had. Oh, yeah, the international one.
Yeah, which also aims to curb multinationals exploiting certain tax loopholes found in developing nations. And what was one of the biggest concerns? Double taxation situations or agreements, which Namibia has in place.
You know, when it comes to, the reason why I asked in terms of the Australian example that you just gave, the reason why I asked, so it's, they don't have some kind of guardrails in their, in their legal system.
Dude, they've got nothing.
And that's why I'm saying that's intentional.
Yeah.
And that means someone in the government created that atmosphere for easy exploitation by multinational corporations. And this is where now I stop blaming multinational corporations, start pointing all the fingers on regulations. And we can see the exact same thing here with the now very famous or infamous, depending on which side of the spectrum you are, the Fish Road case.
Yeah.
What are the Icelandic saying? Well, corruption is not here. It's that side.
It's in your country.
Well, there are opportunists everywhere. Now, I was reading up last night on the America First Global Health Strategy. Now, Ghana has just joined a list of countries that have rejected that deal.
Every day I love Ghana.
Yeah.
I love, do you know why, Helmut? Because Ghana seems to be, okay, Namibia does it quietly, but Ghana is like this very public, moral compass for African, but it's a scenario of saying, no, dude, listen, we can't have your deal imposed on us.
The imposition part.
Just so that we have to agree not to work with the World Health Organization, where the World Health Organization says we are here for everyone.
Now, the interesting part is these talks between the US and Ghana started in November last year.
Yeah.
And that talk was supposed to end with Ghana getting, I think, US health aid of 100 and something million. And that's about 1 point something billion in Namibian dollars. Now, the Ghanaian government basically withdrew out of those talks, citing data security concerns. The thing is, the Zimbabweans withdrew out of those talks, citing the exact same thing, data security concerns. And who's that? The Kenyans signed in the beginning of December, by mid-December, and I think it was an NGO that's also based in Ghana. They filed a petition with the court, and the court had to put had to suspend parts of the deal, again citing national security concern, which raises three questions. One, Uganda and Kagame's country.
Rwanda.
Uganda and Rwanda have signed that deal already. And if it wasn't for that non-governmental organization, the NGO in Ghana, to write a petition to the courts, Kenya would have been on board. Now, the question now I just can't help, ask myself when I'm looking at these different countries' reaction to the very same proposal from the look of things is, several questions. One, are these guys presented with different, proposals? And when it comes to data exchange, the document itself, the America First, the Global Health Strategy, is very explicit in the way that explains how data is going to be shared in between the countries that are, that's the U.S. and the country that's saying yes to those agreements.
Yeah.
One of the questions that raises is, Of course, the agreement itself is not made public because Reuters tried reaching out to U.S. Representatives and the way they wanted to inquire more on the deal, and they, understandably said, they don't disclose that information, which is, again, understandable. This, for Kenya, if it wasn't for an NGO, the deal would have gone through. Now, what I don't get is Kenya was almost up in flames because of the tax bill.
Yep. That we did last year.
Exactly. Now, there is something I don't understand, Paul. I'm sorry about the Kenyan president. Because, he's an academic, he's a very academic guy. He's a very smart guy. Which is, which makes it very painful because, if he signed the deal, only to be told by the court of his own country, the dude, there's a lot of data security concerns here. How did you miss this? One, said yes to this before you signed, and it was signed in Washington. Now, Ghana was like, yeah, that's a nice deal, but no thank you. Zimbabwe was like, yeah, that's a nice deal, and also a lot of money, but dude, this is a lot of health data that of my people I will have to be sharing with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's either Uganda and Rwanda were given a different deal, or they don't care about their people's health data security, which is scary across the African continent. Now, that regulation concern, look, when a multinational corporation is coming into your country to take advantage of you, you are partly to blame. The first thing you have to look at is, what does your regulation say about what that multinational corporation is doing? If you have weak regulations, that's on you. If the regulations are non-existent, that's on you. If the regulations are existent but they are not enforced, again, that's on you. 90% of the blames that we pin on multinational corporations, they just find loopholes and exploit them.
Yep. And it is, unfortunately, that kind of a particular discussion about the loophole aspect of things.
Yeah, look, they have an army of lawyers. If there are loopholes, they're going to find them.
Yeah, they will.
You just have to keep your game up, buddy.
The other concern is, for example, like in our discussion, Helmut, where there have been questions about, will Namibia now actually, will we take, for example, like the Petroleum Act and try to update it? And will we try to bring out a completely different act for green hydrogen and renewable energy sources?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the articles I remember still from last year or from start of this year was one that cited the potential sort of like, I almost used the word merger, but it would be a template whereby all these acts would be basically in positioned under one particular piece of legislation. The concern has been, from that one article that I read, was that the green hydrogen guys are not extraction. Yes.
They're manufacturing.
They use water. But they're not extracting the water. The water is just lying there. It's a big mass of sea.
Mm-hmm.
So all they're doing is just pumping it to a desalination plant. That's the basic understanding. And then they're going to use wind energy and sunlight energy to basically do the atom splitting at Lüderitz, potentially also at here at Walvis Bay, and obviously all the affiliated projects that try to play one or other role in terms of either ensuring food security or either producing a carbon-free product like the what's that steel that carbon-free steel from the other platform,
the high iron platform.
So I understand those things because all of it speaks towards manufacturing, except for the Dauras Green Hydrogen Village guys, because they are technically giving you a template of this is what growing food with the product of ammonia fertilizer looks like. This is the level of threshold you can achieve in terms of continuous usage on the same pieces of land, and this is what we want to envisage for the country. So when you look at that platform, at that specific installation, you've got to view it, Helmut, like it's like a research and development, a research and testing platform, which shows to the world, technically to Namibia, there's a revolutionized way of looking at, crop cultivation, but by using certain particular inputs that come through from green hydrogen. Now, stepping away from that, Helmut, what I now explained to you, stepping away from looking at the renewable energy production elements.
Yeah.
So since much of it is going to be about manufacturing, we obviously also have to take into consideration the kind of legislation that needs to regulate and govern a certain particular sector or sectors. The other discussion that we did like 3 weeks back, I think at the end of March, the one about the eco dialogue on the oil and gas, where the lady, the lawyer said the amendments proposed by the Petroleum Act about shifting the Petroleum Commissioner's position into the presidency and making it a specific office there, a specific commission with, is it a Director General? Is the position, would be one that, firstly, it raises obviously the eyebrows. Secondly,
a lot of them. Yeah.
Secondly, if things go wrong, will the president come and explain, please explain to a standing committee, an oversight committee? Because an oversight committee, which I saw back on Friday, called the Minister of Finance.
Yeah.
And
she was there?
And she was there with her affiliates and her particular immediate sort of like, what you call it? Support staff. Now, will the president come up and explain?
So the entire cabinet?
Exactly. Will they come and explain if something goes wrong or word comes out that a specific negotiation went south? So would there be that kind of an avenue? Another scenario obviously was the discussion of the particular powers that would be preserved within this act.
Mm-hmm.
That would then be, would be moved from the minister, from the position of the minister to the position of the president and that particular office. What does this look like? Because now I can't send a email to the press office of the state. I was asking, the minister said this and this, the president said this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us any facts or any figures or any of this and any of that and any of these particular discussions? Because the moment that the amendments came about in the parliament at the start of this year, I immediately started thinking about EITI. Hence the reason why we had the EITI conversation again. Because we need to know about open negotiations, contracting. Do the quantities, correlate of what is produced with what is being paid in royalties and taxes and XYZ particular benefits that we're supposed to get? And how do we see that the money then collected being deployed in the Namibian economy? Because right now, even if we go and sit and listen and read every ministerial speech of every budget year, I mean, let's take it from 2020, the rebuild phase from 2020.
Let's start it from 2020 on the other side of the break.
Catch, At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like 36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots baby walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and as always, we're here until the hour of 6, that's from 4. So, Dwight, let's start from 2020.
Yeah, so if we count from 2020, Hamoud, literally the rebuild phase, because technically anything before 2020 doesn't count anymore. As, yes, it factors into trend analysis, but if you had a major disruption like 2020 and 2021, we're talking about major rebuilding and repivoting and redirection and re-strategizing to go to 2030. So the subject matter here starts looking at a discussion of, and I'm quoting the Icelandic guys once again, Iceland doesn't have a corruption issue, Namibia does. Which is a fact, but you can also technically say, but Iceland is just good at hiding their corruption because we don't know jack anything about Iceland.
No, the one thing about developed countries is that one of the reasons why they always keep coming up on top of the, you know, least corrupt countries is because they figured out a way to export corruption.
True.
Yeah.
And usually it comes in the formats of their companies.
Exactly.
Because that is literally what that guy did. That guy from the Icelandic company.
Yep.
He came to find a way to get access to Namibia's profitable what?
Marine industry. And, well, all you just have to do, this one thing I've learned from Fisher. All you just have to do is go to a country and then meet the guy in charge, give them an offer he can't refuse. In our case, it was an iPhone with 2 SIM cards. Very cheap.
No, it was even worse.
Was it?
It actually started earlier. You get there, you accidentally bump into the guy that's married to the guy that wants an iPhone with 2 SIM cards.
Accidentally.
Who's married to the daughter of the guy who's accidentally looking for an iPhone with 2 SIM cards.
You know, one of my favorite, Latin phrases, casu consulto. Mm. It literally translates to accidentally on purpose.
Yeah, the Romans, man. Now,
accidentally bumping into someone's daughter who happens to be in the industry that you want to...
No, the son-in-law.
The son-in-law.
Yeah.
That's not... Okay, that's an accident, but it's on purpose. That's
one accident. It happens. You accidentally bump into the guy who's married to the daughter of a minister. It just smells of, like, rank fish. From every direction.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I just, you know, over-dramatized rank fish. I've never smelled rank fish. I don't hope to ever come across that smell, but yeah.
Yeah, speaking of the Romans, they had some type of soup that they made from fermented fish. I don't want to get anywhere close to that soup.
Why, Helmut? What's wrong with soup, Helmut?
From fermented fish. Did you miss the part where I'm saying fermented fish?
What's wrong, Helmut?
Under the scorching sun. Fish already comes natural with a very interesting jelly-like spray.
And with a pungent smell associated to that spray.
Now, imagine fermenting that smell. For some reason, the Romans were like, this is awesome. But anyway. No, look.
I think they probably thought, no, we are the clever guys. Look at us.
Romans. Yeah, don't look up their toilets.
what?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Don't. They're just sitting, you know, sharing stories and high fives, sharing sponges. Yikes. No.
You just had to pull it now. You just had to go there.
Throw it in there. Look, these are the guys that, you know, that,
no.
These are the guys that gave you Descendants that thought they were bringing you civilization. Now.
True.
Guys, I love history for a reason, because it really paints a picture of who, a group of people's history, or an individual's history, a country's history, you know, helps you get a clear image of where they're coming from and how that may have, molded them into who they are today.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, in case of corruption, I'm going to go back again to my very, very, very confusing piece of information I ran into last night, which is, why is this deal throwing off red flags left, right, and center? But I'm reading about other countries already signed the deal. I'm like, were these guys given a different deal, or is just they were just looking at the money? Because you have to understand, the Ghanaians were supposed to get 109 million. And Zimbabwe also was supposed to get, all these amounts of money are ranging in millions, but they said no.
Mm.
Because, they just looked at it and went like,
definitely
not. Our priority is the, health data of our people. Now, if you signed, if everyone else is already complaining about how intrusive in terms of, in terms of privacy this deal is, and they've already signed it, I have so many questions. Unless you tell me that you're given a different deal, all I'm going to think of is, wow. You know what? Park the bus there. Now, Ghana was supposed to get 109 million, which, if my math is correct, it translates to 1.8 billion?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, Ghana.
Are you talking about Namibian dollars?
In Namibian dollar.
Two.
Jeez.
Okay.
1.8 to the nearest whole number. Definitely give you two. Now, the thing is, the Icelandics, in a way, they are right. But one thing I know about developed countries is through their private companies, they figured out a way to export corruption.
Right. Almost 1.9 billion.
Almost 1.9 billion.
Yeah.
The thing is, foreign companies, okay, every time there are corruption allegations in a developed country, in a developing country, there is a company from a developed country, involved in those corruption allegations.
Yeah.
And this is all the way through. So that means a lot of developed countries have figured out a way to export corruption. And this is where, there's an article that was part of a 2021 or 2022, Transparency International report.
Mm.
Yeah, that's where they looked at different countries and how they deal with, corruption perpetuated by multinational companies that are headquartered in their country, outside their borders. And, last time I checked, Australia seems to be doing fairly well in terms of prosecuting those companies. But a large chunk of developed countries, they don't do anything about it. So.
Because they're employers, Helmut.
Yeah, but they are employers, but I'm not blaming these guys 100%. And the reason is we are playing a role in our own downfall.
Yeah.
And Fish Road is an excellent example of that. Those guys, they could have said no, but if the documentary, which is still on YouTube, boy, you gotta love Al Jazeera, all they said was, keep your voice down. That means when you approach, every country has people that are opportunistic, unfortunately. And
no, they will always be.
Yeah, and believe me, for the right price, everyone is opportunistic. Especially, just throwing up. But come on, guys. If you are going to sell our natural resources on, under our noses, at least ask for something fancy. Ask for a private jet. Ask for...
But why, Helmut? Why would we need...
And Ivan with two symbols?
Why would we need people of such a caliber to represent us Namibians? If they're already earning a salary. Look, Helmut. When it comes to perks, mm-hmm. certain roles in the Namibian economy already comes with perks.
Mm-hmm.
Why must the economy literally, or a sector literally, be derailed around a dinner? Around a dinner. Meaning how easy it is to just get a very important person
mm-hmm.
to have a nice fancy meal that you're paying for.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even getting sloshed. They're not even having steady stumpies with Jägermeister. Definitely a pun intended. Or they're not reinventing a new cocktail drink right there on the spot. No, they're just having a basic lunch.
That's coming with a lot of kickbacks.
Of course.
Yeah.
But the person already has perks,
already
to their
salary,
job.
Already all kinds of benefits.
They already have the perks. They already have the salary. They already have the other particular, what you call it, sort of like incentivized elements around their position.
Yeah.
Why would they need more?
Very simple. Agreed.
Okay. Very yeah. simple. That one I know.
Yeah.
But I'm still letting the question hang there because the answer is out there for our listeners to go and think to themselves. No, guys, we're not giving you homework. It's just go think to yourselves.
No one is going to mug you.
Why would you want to be greedy if, for example, if you come out of a background where, let's say, everything is sorted for you?
Yeah.
Or you've got a position in life and in a national role. Everything is sorted for you. You just have to perform to get the results. Now, here's where... If you had to look at it, for example, in the discussion, let's say you put it on the European side of things, or even on the Chinese side of things. Why is it that everyone firstly acknowledges, let's achieve the goal of the plan,
mm-hmm.
before we start thinking about who benefits from what?
No, we have it the other way around.
I know we have it yeah. the other way around, meaning...
Let me benefit first and then...
What am I getting out of me expending energy in this endeavor? And then we don't even reach the endeavor because we've got another scenario once again of we want to literally first have the money and not deliver.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I showed you that particular piece of lovely reading as well. It's another scenario. An unfinished school, Helmut. And this is from a contractor, meaning a private sector operator. An unfinished school is taking forever to finish in the Erongo region. An unfinished school. Is this the kind of economy Namibia is working with? An economy that doesn't deliver, but an economy that wants investment,
mm-hmm.
that wants impetus, that wants, what's the other one? Incentivization. But to what extent must you be incentivized to deliver?
It's a very simple question. If you are being paid, for what?
Helmut.
And once you figure out the what, then you basically have to give it your all.
Helmut, do you know that? For example, if we look at the shack dwellers in the affordable housing discussion, you look at the shack dwellers, guys, which is basically an NGO. They're basically an NGO with an economic purpose. They deliver on giving their members a house.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone pitched in with a collection activity. And you, the one with the need, you also contributed. You paid a specific amount of money, a tally of money, for this dream to have your own erected structure of brick and mortar, of adequate housing and shelter standard, wherever you find yourself that they've got a presence or membership across the country in the needy communities of the country.
Yeah.
How does an NGO deliver quicker than a town council that has annual budgeting? How do they deliver quicker than a private sector operator, like in this scenario of that article, mm-hmm. who took forever to build a bunch of school buildings, because it's one school and its various blocks.
Mm-hmm.
How do they deliver better than such a scenario where that person has a dedicated time frame, a budgeted financial cycle, meaning they're going to get money for every year that they've got to build this thing. And then they've got to hand over said particular product at the end of the time frame that they've got to work for. So meaning they're project oriented. Their projects speak about, you know, what they had to deliver and what they've been paid for. How do you not deliver there? Is this another scenario like the Namra scenario where you underquoted yourself? You couldn't fix supply rates at your suppliers. It's not the Ministry of Education's job to go and fix supply rates for you.
You have to do the math yourself.
It's your negotiations. It's your discussion. So why are we sitting with, like, once again, substandard performance in the Namibian economy? Another scenario is also the questions around, you know, why are we talking about building back or building up the local content policy discussion after we had, up to independence, performance of local content policy? Why are we talking now about capacity development if we had capacity up until 1990? Why are we now talking about trying to find our feet in the global arena if we could perform, Helmut? If we literally could perform. Do you know that there's now a movement in South Africa about a whole bunch of I won't call them woke people, but it's usually, it's mostly black South Africans who are talking about, you know, they enjoyed the apartheid system where things were planned for them. Now, I don't like such particular rhetoric.
Yeah.
But you can see a fact in their logic. Things were planned. You just didn't hear about the corruption, obviously, that was being committed by the South African government of the time because the information was censored.
Yeah.
Now you've got access to information. You have a right, Helmut, to know where which minister is flying where. You now have the right where you can even see your favorite minister in an Al Jazeera documentary.
Yeah.
Saying, whether they like it or not.
You're saying lower your voice. We don't want to be on the front page. Still my favorite.
I still like that one. He's even saying, oh my bra, you're already being caught.
Bro, a no clue across the table. Say, come here.
Do you know how bad it looks now for you as the person saying that after watching yourself being recorded saying that in a sting operation? No, don't worry. They might hear us, you know. Don't speak so loudly. So, we obviously have the scenario of, you know, what are we actually looking for in the next 2026 to 2030? That makes it 5 years, ne? Yeah. In the next 5 years, what are we actually looking for in Namibia's developmental path? Now, Helmut, since January, I've become convinced the more we don't hear anything new coming out of these oil and gas deliberations, the more the facade is becoming wobbly. I am off
the
that.
The more the questions you're going to come up with.
No, I won't even have questions. Mm. How much, have you ever heard of that thing when someone speaks too much about something and you, okay, let me throw you with a massive philosophic humdinger. Since you were a kid, you were told specifically about, there will be a coming, you know, once again, a return of, either Jesus Christ or God himself, in terms of, you know, coming back to earth and all
the next
that
advent.
And they'll be, yeah. And I even heard our colleague earlier today, what's her name? Happy, make mention of that, the second rapture in a couple of years. And I was like, wat so goed praat die mense? Why are people throwing in things where, with critical thinking, you can go and think to yourself, okay, something that was written 3,000 years ago, was that written for the uneducated masses of the time? And is it something that we need to be repeating for the predominantly educated people? Because a lot of us are way more educated than people back then. Post Jesus, you know, or during the period of Jesus. People were not as educated as they are today. and we have access to more information.
Yeah.
So, would you repeat something?
The irony that we are, you know, you still have a lot of
thinking that some tragedy would just happen like that. The particular thinking, the reason why I bring up that example mm-hmm. is the more you grow, as you get older, and someone continuously repeats something over and over, but you don't see a materialization of the words.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, you will reach a point where you just go like, well, I'll put it to one side in my brain. I'll entertain it as something either historic or something either fairy tale-like. For example, like what happened with Jonah. Jonah and the whale.
Look, Jonah just had an understanding wife.
Dude, do you think your wife in 2026 will believe you? You were swallowed by a whale? Firstly, how big must that whale be, Hamoud?
Okay, here's the...
Secondly, we obviously have to... We can take things for granted. There probably were some pretty big fish species back then when Jonah was gallivanting on the beach.
Yeah.
There in the Middle East. But... You and I know, Helmut, the moment something ends up in your belly, digestion juices start working their magic.
No, look, one thing I don't admire about modern day Christians is that they don't question things. Because every time I read the Bible, I read about, guys who were very, 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 very brave. Cain literally asked God, am I his keeper?
Now,
look, this homie was talking to God.
Exactly. Now, he's on top of that.
Cain, where's your brother? Am I his keeper?
But still ask yourself, Hamoud, with that discussion, whose history is that?
Jeez. Look, the courage is awesome. But anyway, look.
And today you're being taught to be God-fearing, to show respect. But the particular lessons from that, because religion was also used as a particular mechanism to try and teach people about neighborliness, to try and instill some aspect of humanity. Now, I ask you, Helmut, 3,000 years ago, do you see a reality of anything that was written in the Bible today? Do you see it repeating today? Meaning you can go and test it like an experiment and the thing will pop off like it's explained there. No, you won't see it.
Well, it still happens. All you just need is the right man, goes by the title Man of God, and a special oil.
Yeah.
Let's go with olive, throw in a few incantations. We are so
cooking oil here with us.
We are so getting madder today. But look, the thing is, back on the whole Iceland and corruption thing, because the reason why I went that direction is because, it all started from the whole, Ghana story.
Yeah.
Because, have a lot of different African countries that are reacting differently to seemingly the same deal. That to me boils down to, whether on a continental or on a national level, representatives from multinational corporations will always show up and try to take advantage of whatever the situation they see. And believe me, there is not a single, investor that just pops up and, out of the blue and is like, no, I want to know environment. If they show up, you can bet they have read everything they could put their hands on whatever sector they are planning on investing on.
Yeah.
Those questions are most likely just them weighing just how much do you know your own industry? And if we have to go back to the capital projects, then you know why they more often run into people that have no clue. You have the standing committees. Your fellow Namibians are standing in front of you and asking you, what's the status report on this and this and this project that are taking place in your region?
In your town.
And your reaction, town. Yeah, in your town. And your reaction is, what project? Now, imagine you are talking to an investor because the report to the shareholders were like, just send the money. Yeah. This guy has no clue.
We know what to do.
This guy has no clue what he's running.
Mm.
Now, that's a part of the, for me, it all comes down to regulation. I know it's very easy to point all the fingers to multinational corporations, and believe me, I have read a bunch of multinational corporation scandals, including yours truly, you know, Mozambique, while your fish rot here, and you have your, the famous Panama, you know, Panama Papers. And now, multinational shows up everywhere and started, oh, Nestle, don't get me started on Nestle. They had a scandal last year, was that last year when a Swiss NGO basically approached the Swiss government and told them, you know what, the amount of this particular product that you are supplying to developing countries like India and Africa seem to have more sugar than the amount that you are supplying to countries in the EU. Do you care to explain? Now, first of all, that that's when a lot of African countries now started, you know, the language of we condemn this. I'm like, for the love of God, please.
Condemn. Oh my goodness.
Now look, the question is, where are your regulations?
Or
why does someone from Switzerland have to tell you that the products that you are being fed is different from what actually has a higher sugar content, higher than allowed by the World Health Organization? What the heck?
Or, for example, since we as African countries love subscribing to everything that the UN...
we just say, hand it over. We just sign.
We love subscribing to everything from the UN. Why didn't they just go and look at the prescribed dietary provisions given to developing children in
they
developing
countries? They are right there.
They're right there. It's free to download even. Do you know what was one of the other major concerns also, Helmut? You highlight the sugar particular discussion.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons also Africa has an issue with trade replacement. I keep forgetting the phrase. But it's technically you replace what you are importing with local production. So it's known as the trade replacement something theory, just to let you know. And most of these African countries that you highlighted, that Nestle product, the baby milk formula, mm-hmm. is something that many of these African countries don't have access to. Or they, you know, the parents of those kids didn't grow up on baby milk formula. Somehow, someone was promoting it in their market without following regulations to say, listen, this is meant for your baby. You can start shop. You can start stocking it on the shelves. One of the issues has also been, Helmut, there's an interesting thing that you can also look up about African countries that have. There's a whole bunch of us African countries that have a specific gene for consuming. What's that thing? That protein in milk, the milk protein. The one that makes you lactose intolerant if you have the negative. But it's that milk protein. It's the lactose something. So Namibians have that protein because we love milk. There's a very strong dairy and dairy product consumption, specifically from dairy, from goat and cattle milk.
Milk, yeah.
We love anything from those two animals. The concern is we don't have a huge appetite for almond milk. You know, all these vegetarian derivative alternatives that exist in the retail stores right now. Even though those derivatives are available, they're also very costly, very expensive, and they even stand longer on the shelf life. I mean, even the long life milk moves faster than those products. But the concern is we have an appetite to break down the milk product, the milk protein. Now, if you head into here Central Africa, like there around the Nigeria, Cameroon, Ghana neighborhood, there's something known as it's a specific kind of research thing where they have low milk tolerance. They can't eat or drink milk products past a certain age even, meaning it's not part of their lives. Even in terms of absorbing.
The digestive system is not adapted to it.
Yeah.
Commercial break.
Fikama, katuka, weekend at the Dakura, the ShopRite's big low price carnival. Okokuna, end at the Dakura, no show your Ekupiforosh Mariwa, Kwakurira, Mona, Oilandi Famangashi, Ekiro Ramadirine, the real good frozen mixed chicken portions. Kedora, Eferno Mirongongwe inungwe, Nesenda, Omirongongwe inungwe, Ashike, Oshoya Ekiro Ramadirina no, the Marathon Fine White Sugar. Kedora, Omirongongwe nambari, Nesenda, Omirongongwe inungwe, enda tweti, Ojinongu Shufio Mafiko Longwa Dei, Odura Oyo Twei, Oko ShopRite Apuke. Ashike, Oto kara una omito yoku finda nako kamwe pa mutoroli oma vera vali no mirongo nano wo trolley dashes landa shike shimwe shomwe yetapo ili tatu oyota yukufa ombinga ufindane na ShopRite big low price carnival oma vya pano ha ota akuru mama fikuwa heali ya juni odura oye twei ema ngono marandura pano ota akashikurua
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM.
Yeah, so we're
not adapted to.
Yeah, so where
lactose.
Yeah, so the milk protein discussion is one also based upon what do you have in the market to position as an alternative, for example, for developing children who need calcium on tap early on, primarily to start, for their bones to grow properly. Now, it's one such particular example, Helmut, in terms of how if you can always follow it on the most micro level, which is in retail, specifically in clothing retail, food retail, electronics retail, and even in cars, you can find how if you are not making the thing, someone will find an opportunity to bring the thing in into your country.
Yeah.
Which is the exact same template of, like you explained, with the multinational sends a representative who accidentally bumps into someone at the cocktail bar, who might be married to someone important's daughter, and some scenarios like that.
Someone in their line of work, coincidentally.
And then things just go from there, and then suddenly we see this operation happening.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Actually, that's how business is done.
Yeah, there's actually nothing wrong with that. Or alternatively, like you want to do like the Pantas politics guy from Australia who decided to go and do a fundraiser to go and pay for a lobbyist to lobby on behalf of.
My man.
It's the most radical thing. And the guy's a teacher, ne? This Pantas politics guy. Mm-hmm. He's a teacher by profession. So Helmut, when you have to look at the realm of economics, it shouldn't be just left up to people with certain degrees.
No.
It impacts everyone's life.
Okay. Look, Fisher will make excellent examples today.
It continuously is making excellent examples today.
It wasn't, one thing Fisher taught me is that, be careful of people with fancy English. Because those are the people that are,
Is that now me?
Not your fancy English.
People with fancy English. Like I was told the other time by our colleague here in the office, don't think, Dwight, just because your English pronunciation is on the level of that from the UK, which technically my English is like that from South Africa. Is that you think you're better than us? I'm like, what?
I feel like Namibian's definition of fancy English is too shallow because we measure our fluency of the English language with the words like parallelogram. And
who's that aimed at, Amut? Who's that aimed at?
I don't want to mention any names.
Is that a whole region or is it a person?
Regions, plural.
Okay.
Now, my point is, I think a common belief for a very long time in a lot of African countries, so for a lot of Africans, is that the more educated an individual is, the more morally right they are in terms of a lot of things, which includes corruption.
Mm.
Except, we are quickly learning the very obvious, which is no. It has nothing to do with your academic qualifications.
Yeah.
You can be highly educated and still basically run on the very primitive human fuel called greed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look in the Fisherot, case, for example. Now, how does someone move from, attorney general to minister of justice? Now, this is someone who is very accomplished academically and is a very smart guy, which is why he's representing himself. You can also understand just how smart Saki is, because if you look at how he's been, using the judges, their laws against them. Because bro is just switching judges I don't like you, according to this article, get out. And I don't like you, according to this article, not me, this article. Oh yeah, Hamba. Now, and this has been going on for the past 6 years. So goes to point just how smart Saki is.
Yeah.
Except, whether it's a greed or following the wrong crowd or it's just an iPhone with 2 SIM cards, Mercedes-Benz with 2 engines. I don't know what the motivation was, but here we are.
Yeah.
So, my point is, regulations. Everything is going to boil down to regulations. If you are going to have weak regulations, when someone takes advantage of you, don't blame them. If, you know how they say, nice guys finish last in geopolitics, don't be nice. Even if someone is buying you a cocktail and they're smiling, have your legislations sound. Because if they are not sound, they're going to take advantage of them. Because let's face it, if the script was flipped and you were the minister, and you were the business guy and they were the minister, chances are very high you'll be looking for the same loopholes to take advantage of.
Nah, not me, no.
Yep.
I'll have a target on my back around every corner. So, yeah, I'll be riding a bicycle to work every day. I literally walk to work just not to have a target. Because, look, in the game of politics, what I also realized, Hamid, is that politics is a little bit more brutal. You should see how...
A little bit? That's an understatement.
Yeah, I'm literally understating it on purpose because I'll give you an example. The other guy that I like following, Gary Stevenson, remember the example of last week that I gave you about the political guy that attacked the guy that literally has the postgraduate degree in economics about what academic standing does Gary technically have to be talking about trying to reform a society in the modern age, whereas the guy that's asking this question doesn't have any degree to his name and was invited to become a lecturer at a leading American university in the US. So when we're asking about who's allowed to talk about what, I've literally come to the, and this is a conclusion I live by, Hamoud. Look, academics, scientists, which are also academics, are important because they help to explore information and the world from an unbiased position, because that's one of the aims.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually help to influence policy making from what they researched, okay, not what happened literally with the Red Line court case last year, where permission was not sought from the academic author whose book was being paraded in the court case, and then
as a piece of reference
or evidence reference in that scenario, and then the judge asked, "Did you submit that in pretrial?" "No, I did not." "Okay, it's thrown out because it wasn't there." So, academics have a pivotal role to play. They still play that role today. They played a role back then in human history. They will play that role consistently at every level. And if two academics have a beef with each other, don't take sides, guys. Just let them beef it out in their academic sense.
I think we should start doing the same thing with politicians.
However, when it comes to politicians, Hamoud, do you know how many times you've got to go and fact check, like in the discussions of what is happening, of what politicians sometimes go and say? For example, where we technically
speak, I will create employment. Oh my God. Please, someone put a moratorium on that statement.
Or the 51% ownership in mining endeavors. And you and I immediately pulled out our books with like, okay, so who's going to pay $300 million for a seismic survey? Are you going to subsidize that? Are you going to incentivize that as the Namibian government? Because how many Namibians have 300 million just lying randomly about in their bank accounts? Spare change.
Look, if you can come up with it, yes. But looking at our contribution...
Is it going to be insured even?
That's the question. By who? No, look, one thing that I've learned in terms of our investment capabilities as a country was... what's this mine that we wanted to start with? You know, was that $1 million?
Yeah.
And then we were like, you know what? We're just going to start with $1 million. Now, for those of you that, and it's open for investment. So you can just come in if you have money and, you know, just, you know, put your money in this and then we can build something together, which is a brilliant idea. Except there are not a lot of Namibians that basically have that amount of money to, you know, the amount of money to participate at that level in the extractive industry. There are Namibians, but there are not a lot of them.
You can count them on your hands.
Yeah, you can count them on one hand, and you still be left with enough fingers left to slap someone into a coma. Yes, oil and gas. The one thing that was not explicitly pointed out in this conference, in this International Energy Conference, was has anything changed in terms of production projections from 2024? From my understanding, after going through those, I went through 3 point something hours out of the total 5 hours. In those 3 hours, I didn't hear anything about the change in projections. So that means I still have to stick to the 2024 one that puts it, production in 2034, 2035.
Yeah.
That's one. Two, in terms of participation by local Namibians. Yeah. Actually, in terms of participation by local Namibians, I would be looking more into green hydrogen than oil and gas for two reasons. One, the extractive industry is very skill demanding. Yeah. So that means you must be at a certain level of qualification. And if we can just go back to the green hydrogen, qualification demands that you just pointed out in terms of technical qualifications, the level that the industry demands, we still have to pull our socks to that level as a country.
Yeah.
Because the gentleman that made that point had to acquire that level of qualification from Germany.
Yeah.
Now that's green hydrogen, which is offshore. Now imagine how much, which is onshore.
Yeah.
Now imagine, what is the equivalent of that for an onshore, for an offshore oil and gas industry. It's
going to be some ugly numbers.
It's
not going to be our numbers. Endrikwit boys.
Nope.
It's going to be a lot of them, but it's not going to be our money.
In Ben Franklin's?
Definitely. Or in euros?
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, two things. Graduation speeches are very nice, except we know and this happens every year. After every graduation, there is either a protest or a lot of complaints about lack of job opportunities, and especially those ones that are in education. And I'm using the guys that are
in the sphere of education, because there's a very nice precedence in terms of protesting due to lack of jobs. The Minister of Education, was that last year, had to point out that, I said, you're missing the point here. They are, we are oversupplying the lower primary. There are more graduates in lower primary qualifications than there are opportunities available. Mm. What we need is people to major more in secondary. Now, the thing is, the people that should have been hearing that, a lot of people will tell you, I'm not into politics. And then even after the Minister of Education saying that, you still find someone this year and next year applying to study exactly what the Minister of Education said, please don't.
Yeah. And there was still...
4 or 5 years down the line, you'll graduate, nice speech, nice pictures, except there's no job. And you'll go back to the minister again. Minister, we don't have opportunities. And like, now what? And the biggest problem here is also in the academic sphere, because I feel like we are at that point where we are running. We are in a situation of too big to fail. We already have established faculties in these academic qualifications.
Yeah.
Now, if we are telling prospective students not to venture in them, why do we have them running? Just a question I just decided to throw up.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah.
It can also just hang there.
You just leave it in the ionosphere.
Yeah, it should just hang there. Another particular thing that's also... Okay, something earlier today was also highlighted. You can't find a job, go and make a job. And I'm repeating this from earlier as well. But who's going to give you money?
If you can't find a job, go and
make jobs. Well, who's going to give you the money?
If you don't have food, go and make food.
If you don't have a house, just go make a
house. Yeah, just go and build a house. You can't be homeless if you want a house, just go and build one.
Well, I also like fairy tales up until when I was 19. Yeah, sure. After that, you know.
You basically grow up.
You wipe that situation that grows on your eyes when you sleep. You wipe it out of your eyes.
And you wake up to the harsh reality of the world, yeah.
Yeah, which sometimes includes.
If you don't have a job, go and make a job. Say someone who was given a job. Now, I would like an example, please, like a practical example on how to make a job. That would be nice.
That's if you can build a house, if we do have those skills.
Look, man, I feel like the statements like that should be coming out of the private sector, yeah. Not the public sector. I understand if that statement is coming out of the private sector, because this is someone that risked their investment into starting a business which has then employed people. But if you are in the public sector, Oga, you are given a job. You can't be telling people go and make a job, because if you had that power, you would have made one for yourself.
Yeah, and we would have had, and that is one of the things that came out from the public-private forum of last year. We need to maximize entrepreneurial endeavors. We need to have more people making, registering small businesses who are then offering services, thus paying salaries. These salaries then get reinvested back into the economy through consumption. We need to have that kind of ecosystem thriving in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
The concern is, Helmut, we don't see these statistics. How many businesses close? How many businesses shut down after a specific period? What were the reasons given? What happened? Were they blacklisted? Their bank accounts frozen? Did they participate in something dodgy?
Did they, abandon a project? Or was the project were they kicked out of a project because they were taking too long to complete the project?
Exactly. All those particular things. Because, what does the reality on the ground speak to? What does it speak to?
Go and make a job.
And this is where also how we deal with certain particular things in Namibia, Helmut. We actively need statistics and statistic monitoring coming out. Data monitoring, data dispensation coming out of the NSA. And this, you know, I'm inadvertently making a point here or case for the NSA to actually get more funding than they actually get if annually, so that they can go and crunch more numbers. Mm-hmm. Because how much is the thing, in essence? Everybody needs to be submitting data to this agency so that this agency is delivering data on a daily basis. That you should be able to just pull up a report. Just like that. You just pull up a report.
And there's information on health, there's information on employment,
immigration, on everything. But we've got so many blind spots in Namibia's information landscape that the blind spots can't tell you how many people are in a specific sector with certain skills and what are their age ranges. And, you know, are they available to be hired by these new business ventures? Yes or no? There's no such thing. Now you need to hope those businesses will place adverts in local media. And you hope, as the advertiser placing that advert in local media, that somebody sees the ad and will apply. You're hoping on a hope.
That's a lot of fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's literally fingers crossed, you know, a crossed finger economic planning. But yeah, that's where we sit with this particular scenario. But before we're going to actually continue, we're quickly taking a short break, guys, for a quick ad break. Belvita University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements for candidates are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the Health Professions Council of Namibia. Candidates must have a minimum of 2 years of working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery is full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406, Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, the crossed finger hopeful scenario is there.
You know it's my favorite part. No, but finish first.
Yeah, so we have to look at things holistically to try and understand how much are we seeing an actual trajectory going forward? I would love once again to go and look up about Namibia's particular gains with regards to the SDGs once again, just to see how far we are. I saw something interesting yesterday from the UN's guys, because the SDGs are technically a reflection of the NDP6.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the NDP6 is almost a year old now, since July or June last year, almost a year. It would be interesting to see, you know, what have been some of the achievements measured up to the SDGs that Namibia said yes to. And this is besides the additional pledge and agreement Namibia has with the Pact of the Future. Because the Pact of the Future is just saying streamline the SDGs a lot quicker.
Look, first of all, that's very contradictory. Just the statement is streamline. Okay, yeah, I get it. But we all want development, right?
Mm.
Which is, you know, SDG, Agenda 2063, Agenda 2030. I mean, African Union, European Union, you know, joined, you know, Vision 2030 and all that. First, tracking that, fast tracking that. I think we could have done more. We could have done more, but then there were we went through a lot of playing, because now that we, especially with regards to Vision 2030, we're in 2026. In 2030, if and 2030 is just 4 years down the line.
Yeah.
So, if you look at the goals that you know that Vision 2036 to accomplish, and you look at the remaining time period, you don't have to be an economist or any type of expert to know that this is more fantasy than reality. And you are looking at a large-scale construction to pull off the physical infrastructure alone, let alone the, you know, the whole service provision, the service provision goals, because all that, okay, take in health, for example. If you are going to offer, like, developed world, developed country level of health service all across the country, you have your universal health coverage. In 4 years.
Yeah, in 4 years.
I'm looking at the infrastructure and I can already tell you, yeah. Fantasy, sure. Goal, not much. It was a goal a couple of years ago, but now it's not much.
Mm-hmm.
Because the physical infrastructure itself is going to take from now until 2030. And you are looking, or you are also, if you are looking at the, you know, the high, top tier health, you know, health services, you also need a lot of personnel, which is one of the biggest problems, especially in the public sector in Namibia. You need a lot of personnel because the personnel in the public health sector is not enough to cater, you know, to cater for the group that it's the public sector is catering for. It's way, you know, the health personnel to the patient ratio in the public sector is wildly disproportionate compared to the private sector's, to the private sector one.
Yeah.
Which is why there are a lot of queues. Which is why you run into a lot of them, and I'm not making any, you know, making an excuse for you guys here to start yelling at patients. You have someone that's been, you know, haven't slept in days. Now they have to attend to all this queue. So, because they're going to throw a tantrum here and then, and when you throw in all the, you know, the economic problems, you know, personal problems, which are, can be finance problems, family related problems, jolo related problems come from all kinds of problems.
Did you almost say jolo price?
Yeah, no, jolo.
What is jolo?
You don't know what jolo is?
No.
Jolo.
Oh, Helmut, no. Helmut.
Look, health personnel are also persons. They have these problems.
Oh, Helmut, no. Look, okay, yeah, those
but
problems.
But they're in the right proximity to, you know, therapists, most like, you know.
That's also if the therapists are also not experiencing similar.
I bet it must be painful being a therapist, because who is going to therapist you when you are going through therapist needed
interventions?
Yeah. This whole thing of me going through a breakup and I'm sitting on your couch and your first question is, tell me about your childhood. It happened yesterday. It happened yesterday. Please.
Not the childhood of 20 years ago.
And also, I don't think I've met anyone that wants to talk about their childhood. There are a lot of memories that must be remain buried.
In some scenarios, it's a discussion of, why are you going that far? There's things I don't want to remember now.
Nope.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm one of those that are actually fortunate enough to have both my parents alive. And the last thing I would do is actually, you know, put my siblings and my mom with my wife to be in the same
room.
That's the worst thing you can do. Because the stories that they'll be telling her, yeesh, some of those things you totally forgot. And they'll turn that into a bonding party. You know, when he was at this age, his general was caught in a zipper. Oh, mom, not now.
Why are we there? Why are we there?
Because it's time up.
Yeah, so before we before we get there, guys, just to let you know specifically, the conversation, it's one of the reasons why I said yesterday, was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. Not many new messaging
came out of
this particular discussion. Meaning it's important to identify, listen guys, just stick to the baseline survey report that says 2034.
Yeah.
If anyone comes up with anything contradicting that, sure. But they've also got to prove certain particular results.
Yeah.
Because the baseline survey, according to me, was as comprehensive, as detailed,
yeah,
outlined in both versions of the same report, meaning the summary
and the full one.
Yeah, the summarized one and then the actual report itself that, hey, listen, guys, you know what? Here's this lovely in-depth look at can we actually handle with the extraction of oil and gas. Straightforward.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait.
They said partially yes, we have certain things in place, but certain things we'll have to build up to. We'll have to train. We'll have to install. We'll have to buy. We'll have to procure.
Yeah.
And
that's not going to take
a year.
Instantly. Yeah, or a year. It's going to take...
There's no instant porridge to this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Literally.
There's literally no instant porridge.
No, there's no instant porridge.
And in between, we've obviously got to manage our fellow Namibians who want dual SIM card capabilities.
That's where the regulation part of it now comes in.
That's not a regulation. That's like, let's bring in a law for you, Dwight. You want a Land Cruiser that can literally fly, slide, swim, dive, and ride on the roads. No. You have got ambitions for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, one SIM card is enough to make phone calls, guys.
Because it works.
Yeah.
It works with that one SIM card.
Well, I've never been to China. You have been. Maybe calling China requires two SIM cards.
Not really, Hamid.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
Just asking for something petty. Like, that's the worst thing you can ask for as an adult.
Not really. Because... that's not the marketing I saw there in China. If you've ever been to Sandton in Johannesburg, imagine a whole city. Sandton is but a small part of Johannesburg. Imagine a city like Sandton. It's just billboards, flashing lights, and you, the headless chicken African, are going like, wow, wow, what's that? Oh my goodness. Yay.
That's nice.
You'll just be bamboozled around every corner.
Long story short.
We need more billboards.
We shall wait.
In Namibia.
For the oil and gas industry production phase.
Yeah.
We shall wait. And the good news for coming out of OPEC and the International Energy, is it International Energy Agency or International Atomic Energy Agency? International Energy Agency. One thing that's coming from those two is that, the consumption of the product we want to, produce seems to be on the rise. And, yeah. Who knows what's going to happen? A lot of things can happen in between now. If we have learned anything from 2016, from January 3rd, is that a lot of things can happen in between now and 2035. Mm. Just drive safe and make sure, you don't kick the bucket. Don't drink and drive. Just do the very simple things, that ensures you reach 2030. 435.
Yeah.
Imagine missing on oil's revenue because you were caught in someone's house. Seriously, dude, be serious. Find a tender that is not taken. If you don't understand that, I admire your innocence.
A tender that's not taken,
Elmer? Find a project that's not taken. Thank you. Find a project that's not taken.
4 minutes into the hour of six. So that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From yours truly here, y'all have a blessed evening.
On that note, guys, stay tuned for the next program after the break.